Hello, and I'm here with Max Solomon and Barbara Robertson, VFX freelance writer. And Max Solomon is the animation supervisor for Framestore on the latest Alfonso Cuarón movie, Gravity. Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
So it's going to be an open conversation. Gravity, Max, I heard you say in the talk previously, it's the first time Previs was put to the test and was brought to that level, and you seem happy about it. Can you tell us a little bit more about this? You were brought onto the project to actually conduct Previs, is it right?
That's right, yeah. Initially, there was a small team of us doing the Previs, but as the complexity of the shoot grew, we realized that the Previs would actually drive the shoot, and so the team grew. At one point, it was 30 animators working on it, and the detail of the Previs grew as well. And we, what was great was that the Previs that we did was actually informed the shoot, and it was nice to see the work that we'd done actually be in the final film. Usually, Previs is used as a way of developing ideas, and here it was that the ideas were locked into the Previs.
Were you able to use the animation from the Previs? Did it follow through the pipeline and actually inform the post-production animation?
Well, the animation, it was certainly a starting point after the shoot when we had to reanimate. But the performance of the timings, of the actors from the shoot was different. And also Alfonso started to explore variations on the theme. And so we quickly found that we were basically just reblocking and reanimating. I mean, when you compare the Previs to the final shot, it's very similar. The ideas, the concepts are all there, but there's changes.
So, for example, choices of lens, or I heard he chose just three main lenses, right? Then you worked with that.
Yeah, pretty much 21 mil, I think, all the time. And then there's slight variations. Sometimes you went to 18. And I think sometimes it's 16. There's a shot where we go into the helmet, and I think that was like on a fisheye lens, super wide lens. But Alfonso pretty much only uses 21 mil lenses in his films.
And so, if I understand, because people don't understand how it was done, really, it's very hard for people to grasp how it was shot. Your Previs then drove even the robots.
Mm. And the lights.
And it reverse engineer the motion that you have in the camera, in the computer, and then reverse this to get not the actor moving, but the robots, correct?
Exactly, yeah. So they were driving the motion. There was some motion on the actors, but it was limited. Often they would pivot maybe 180 degrees and twist from side to side a little, but most of the motion was on the robot. That was basically because actors are not very comfortable hanging upside down or even horizontal. they quickly show strain in their faces, which wouldn't be what you get in space.
Yeah, we read that. And so, but tell us, Max, you're an animation supervisor. Were you not like frustrated? At first, when you realized you were on that project, you wondered, what is to animate?
Mm. Well, that actually, it was a hard sell to the animation team at Framestore. A lot of them didn't want to work on the film, and I had to sell the project to them. I'd worked with Alfonso a couple of times before. He's done all of his visual effects films at Framestore. So I was very excited to work with him. I knew that his ideas were always great, and he always pushed. His visual effects is always fantastic. But also I'm not necessarily driven by a particular type of animation. I like to do things that are different, and we'd never done anything like this before. So it wasn't, it was the opportunity to do something different that really excited me rather than, and I feel that actually it was a big animation challenge because it needed to be invisible animation. It needed to be, you didn't want overacting or you had to really get physically real and dynamic motion, which rather than cartoony or...
Explain to the people, you animated everything that's on screen except the actors' faces, which are real, right? So the suits, the arms,
Well, there's different teams of people responsible for different things. Like the animation, you know, of the space suit, as in the fingers and how the arms and legs move, and also how the characters move relative to the camera and how the camera moves as well, is all controlled by animation. But then also there's other layers of motion which were done by different teams. So, for example, the tethers are a big feature in many of the sequences, and they were done with simulation. A mixture of animation. Some of the more complex tether shots were actually animated by hand by some very masochistic artists. And there's also a big simulation of the cloth, the motion of the cloth. All the explosions and destruction that happens in the film was done by a big, fantastic effects team that we have. There's also something I didn't talk about in my talk, but the Earth was a very big challenge because we explore the Earth at all different times of day, different areas, and there was big simulations of cloud structures and weather patterns, the light, the way the light and shadows move across the Earth as the sun, you know, sunrise and sunset. That was all, initially it was thought we would just do it with matte paintings, but because the shots are so long, you know, you have a sustained view of the Earth over a minute or two sometimes, and when you see that, really, you can't just have a static frame. You have to see the cloud formation, the structure, and the shadows move. And so I didn't talk about that, but that was massive. There was all types of motion and different teams responsible for it.
And if I understand correctly, so the Earth, for example, was almost ready before the shoot because it was also used in this light box, was used on set, correct?
Well, or the complexity that was used during the shoot was, it was more, yeah, that was more of a single frame. It was a projection onto the actor, so it was more just used for lighting with different hues. But the detailed Earth didn't really need to be done until later.
What did the animators work on other than the actors? Did they animate the spaceship, the shuttle?
We did all the moving objects. There's a lot of floating objects in all the interiors. A lot of those were animated. Some of them were simulated, and the gross, like the destruction of the ISS, that was all blocked in animation. So all the gross, all the modules, and the choreography of the destruction of the modules was all animated, and then that was used to drive the simulation. So when you see modules crashing together, that was then a simulation, and the guys had a lot of fun smashing things.
So. Was that part of the previs? Did it need to be part of the previs?
Yeah, it was. It was very much part of the previs, because it was all driving the shoot. In large parts of that sequence, actually, Sandra is fully digital. It's only when she's close up that we filmed elements of her. That was shot mostly traditionally. They built a life-size replica of elements of the ISS. It wasn't textured, it was just white polystyrene. It was replaced digitally, but she actually did a fantastic wire rig performance on that sequence. In the beginning, the opening couple of minutes, she's actually on wires clambering over the, and that informed a lot with the animation. So when she was shot that way, the animation was really driven by her performance. We matched all her timings. And
you finished this show a while ago now.
Mm. Yeah, we finished about a year ago. There was a reshoot last summer, which delayed the release, and it was perceived to be a potential awards winner, an Oscar winner, and there's a window of opportunity with the Oscars. And we, because of the delays, we missed that window. And so the film was delayed a year, much to our frustration. But I think it paid off in the end. It also meant that we could polish the work even more. We had more time. We didn't need to rush those last few stages. And there were some nice changes made right at the end. The last thing we changed was in the opening shot. Alfonso, by chance, one day saw somebody watching the opening shot flopped on someone's screen, because we often like to look at things flopped horizontally. Mm. It's nice to look at things differently. You get a more objective, a fresh eye on something. And Alfonso walked past and he says, "Wow, that looks really cool." And he said, "Yeah, it does look cool like that, doesn't it?" He said, "Well, let's do it." And we were like, "What?" Ooh. He said, let's flop the opening shot." And then, but the idea was that we would flop the opening shot and then over the course of that opening shot do a 180-degree roll on the camera, so that by the time we come into Sandra's close-up, we're back in to a sort of more vertical composition. But and it seemed initially a great idea, but when we thought about it, we realized that because we're doing this role, we'd have to re-render that whole section. It also revealed parts of the Hubble that we hadn't seen before, which needed more detail adding. And also the complexity that we didn't realize that because it was a stereo camera, we were actually flopping the eye of the camera. It meant that when you did the join, there was like a little nick on it. It was really hard. We had to animate the lenses, and it was like a real... It was something we'd never had to do in the rest of the film, so we had to sort of animate. I still don't really understand it, actually, but I know it took them a long time to work it out.
Do the animators work in stereo, or do you work...
We during the previous phase, actually, we did stereo tests on about 3 scenes that we were prevising. It got everybody very excited about the previs, about stereo. But it was quite a big overhead, and it wasn't the focus of the shot. So I think it made us realize that stereo would work, and it made us understand what worked and what didn't about it. But it was felt that, you know, we needed to focus on designing the shots, and it sort of went on the back burner. So once we got into it, the focus became the shoot and preparing for the shoot. So it wasn't until after the shoot that then we started again doing stereo tests. But that wasn't done by the animators. There was this stereo team who were rendering it.
So are you happy you can talk about it in the open now?
Yeah, it was weird for, you know, I was on it for 2.5 years, and people kept asking me, what are you doing? And yeah. I'd say, oh, I'm doing this film, and nobody had ever heard of it. And people got bored of asking me and me saying the same thing, and then they've almost forgot about it. Yeah. And so, yeah, it's nice to finally see it on the screen. Yeah.
And it's well received, and it's beautiful. Congratulations.
Yeah, more than we imagined, actually, I think we... When it got delayed, we all thought it would sort of sink into the ether. But yeah, it's been well received.
What's your favorite shot, Max, at the end of it? Or maybe not in animation terms, but even visually or whatever. What do you one shot that strikes you still now, after these 3.5 years?
I think the most accomplished section is the opening section. It really establishes everything about the film, the contrast between the opening 10 or so minutes where you just establish the characters and you're just led in a very seductive, beautifully choreographed flow of action and dialogue. And then it all kicks off with the debris, and there's the contrast of that really works fantastically. And I think everything in it blends together so well, the performance of the actors, the animation, the lighting, the look, the sound. It's just, it's an awesome section.
It's a whole piece. One last word? No. We thank you very much for your time, and we appreciate you taking the time, and congratulations to Framestore. Yeah, thank you.
Pleasure, thank you.
That was Pascal for the Art of VFX podcast. See you next time.